Welcome back for the third hour of Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Thursday, 9th of November. We've got audio open lines ahead. Big story. I think this is probably one of the biggest stories, and I think it will go down, win or lose, as a landmark case of the U.S. Supreme Court. Most certainly, if the court decides to uphold the ban on partial birth abortion, which they have heard the arguments yesterday, they're going to make up their minds in a month or two. We'll see. They could decide any time. We just don't know when they're going to announce the decision. It will be a landmark case. It will be one for the history books if they actually uphold the ban on partial birth abortion for two reasons. One, it will be a very long and hard-fought battle to get a court that will uphold a ban on partial birth abortion. And number two, it will also be the first time the court has done anything whatsoever to mitigate the wide open allowance for abortion on demand at all stages of gestation set in place 33, almost 34 years ago by Roe v. Wade. It will be a major blow to the pro-Roe faction. It won't be the overturning of Roe v. Wade. It'll be just a beginning, but it'll be the first time that the Supreme Court has reversed anything that Roe put in place. It will be landmark if they do it. If they don't, it'll be a significant footnote, but probably, sadly, the last time that this court will be listening to any arguments about a ban on partial birth abortion. We're going to hear the NPR story about the arguments that were heard and made yesterday in the Supreme Court chambers on the legality of the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act, and then audio from both sides on the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. I want your response, I want your reaction, and your thoughts. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. One of the recent innovations in coverage of the Supreme Court is that we now get audio from within the court chambers, and this NPR story actually carries some of the arguments and questions raised by the Supreme Court justices, and it gives you a good picture of what happened yesterday in the U.S. Supreme Court regarding partial birth abortion.
A federal law banning so-called partial birth abortion is now in the hands of the U.S. Supreme Court. 6 years ago, the high court struck down a similar state ban. The court declared that the law was an unconstitutional burden on a woman's right to have an abortion because it did not have an exception to protect the health of the mother. 3 years later, Congress enacted a new ban, also without a health exception. This time, the law stated that the partial birth procedure is never medically necessary. Yesterday, the issue was back before the justices, as NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
The procedure that abortion opponents call partial birth is done almost always in the second trimester of pregnancy, when the fetus is not yet able to survive outside the womb. And most of these abortions are done because of the mother's serious health conditions or grave fetal anomalies. 95% of second trimester procedures are called D&Es, meaning dilation and evacuation. In most D&Es, the fetus is dismembered or comes apart in the uterus. But one form of the procedure occurs when the fetus emerges from the womb intact, with the head remaining inside the uterus. And because the head is too big to come out, the doctor compresses it, killing the fetus. That procedure is known as an intact D&E, or a DNX, and it is the procedure abortion opponents call partial birth. Abortion rights advocates counter that the law is so vague its language could be construed to outlaw all second trimester abortions. Defending the ban in the Supreme Court, Solicitor General Paul Clement, questioned by Justice Ginsburg, said that Congress sought to outlaw only DNX procedures, not the more common D&Es.
Here, though, Congress didn't go after the dog, so to speak. It went after the tail.
Even though we're told by some of the medical briefs that the procedures are basically the same. They start out in the same way, and that the differences are not large in particular cases.
I think there is one very important difference between these two procedures that led Congress to ban one and allow the other to stand, and that is whether fetal demise takes place in utero, which is, of course, the hallmark of all abortions, or whether fetal demise, the lethal act, takes place when the fetus is more than halfway out of the mother.
But several justices noted there are some circumstances where a substantial body of medical opinion says a DNX is safer for women, particularly women with severe health conditions. Justice Breyer.
And as soon as you tell me that what's supposed to happen is that the judges are supposed to start deciding whether this is one of these unusual cases or not, rather than relying upon significant medical opinion. I don't see how it's going to work. At least I don't see how it's going to work without some people suffering serious illness as a result of mistakes by the judge.
The question is, when you have a perfectly safe alternative, and you have some doctors who like to do it a different way, can Congress countermand the doctor's judgment, or do the doctors get the final word?
Justice Kennedy, however, seemed troubled by that answer, widely believed to be the deciding vote in this case. Kennedy said that the reason that the DNX is preferred in some cases is because it minimizes the number of times surgical instruments are inserted in the uterus, and that is particularly important in certain cases.
There is a risk if the uterine wall is compromised by cancer or some forms of preeclampsia, and it's very thin. There's a risk of being punctured.
Even in those limited circumstances, the marginal risk between the DNX procedure and the D&E procedure are really, as far as I can tell, non-existent.
Now, I want your thoughts on this. We still got a few more minutes to play in that NPR piece on the arguments that were made, the questions that were asked in the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday about the constitutionality of the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act, the federal ban on partial birth abortion that was passed by both houses of Congress, was signed by the president, and now is mired in its inevitable legal wrangling all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. If this court decides to uphold this ban, it'll be the first time they've done anything to mitigate the damage done by Roe almost 34 years ago. If they decide not to, it may be the very last time that this court agrees to listen to a ban on partial birth abortion. They've listened to state cases and now this federal case, and they probably would not agree, at least this court, not agree to listen again to it. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I want your reaction to what you're hearing in this National Public Radio piece on the Supreme Court's arguments and questions regarding partial birth abortion.
But abortion rights lawyers pointed to testimony and a brief from the American Association of Obstetricians and Gynecologists saying that they disagree. And under questioning from Justice Breyer, Solicitor General Clement conceded that there are no living babies involved in this case.
We're focusing on a universe where the fetus is not going to survive no matter what. Right?
Right.
Okay. So we're not talking about anyone being born and living. They're not going to.
Planned Parenthood's Eve Gartner got an equally skeptical grilling from Chief Justice John Roberts when she talked about why some women prefer to have a fetus injected and killed in utero for psychological reasons.
It's a very personal decision how the woman who's made this very difficult moral religious decision to end her pregnancy, often for very tragic reasons, how does she want the fetus to undergo demise?
If the woman can take into account the impact on the fetus at a certain point in time, and the option, as you said, some physicians give of fetal demise prior to the procedure, why is that beyond the scope of things that Congress can take into account?
Because what Congress has done here is take away from women the option of what may be the safest procedure for her. This court has never recognized a state interest that was sufficient to trump the woman's interest in her health.
A decision in the case is expected later in the court term. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
All right, I want to hear from you on this. This is a moment in history that will probably be noted one way or the other, but it's definitely a moment in history. So I want you to chime in, get your reaction to what you heard there from the Supreme Court chamber. There are arguments being made for their questions being asked by the Supreme Court. That's how the Supreme Court arguments usually work. It's not so much you go in and argue your case. You simply present your case, and then the Supreme Court members get to ask the counsel on either side any question they want to ask before they make up their mind. A term that came up again and again and again, the term fetal demise. They're talking about the death of the fetus. And it is kind of shocking. Who were we talking to yesterday, Jeff, who had actually sat in on these arguments? And he came out and did an interview with us. Yeah, it was Dennis DeMauro of the Northern Virginia Lutherans for Life. He was there in the chambers to listen to the second case arguments. And he said it was just remarkable. Surreal was the word he used, to sit there in these hallowed halls of justice and listen to the lawyers and the judges use this term fetal demise and argue back and forth how fetal demise ought to be managed, how fetal demise ought to be instigated whether a woman wants to make a decision about bringing about fetal demise through this method or that method, always with something in mind about keeping herself safe. Unbelievable. Well, there's more to this. I want to hear from both sides of the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. And we do have both sides represented here, some audio clips, but I also want to hear from you. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address as we come to you live this Thursday, November the 9th. Issues, ETC at KFUO.org. Issues, ETC at KFUO.org. We have audio open lines through the next half hour of the program all the way until the end of Issues, Etc. today. All right. Let's hear from both sides on the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. Here's Nancy Northrup. She's president of the Center for Reproductive Rights. She says that the appeals can be used to limit more than just the late-term procedure.
These cases are about second trimester abortions. They're not about abortions later in pregnancy. And the question is whether doctors who provide abortions as early as 12 to 15 weeks, can they use the safest methods for their patients?
Now, it's often said, and we heard it in the NPR piece too, this is about second trimester. I want you to think about what second trimester is. Second trimester isn't dealing with some baby that's, quarter of an inch long. You're talking about a large fetus. And, of course, the argument being made by those against the ban on partial birth abortion is, if you ban this, what's to stop the Congress or a future court from allowing a ban on other kind of abortion procedures? Look, I'll be honest. They're onto something there. They are. In moral terms, partial birth abortion or any other kind of abortion are equivalent to one another. Partial birth abortion is able to be banned in the present climate and perhaps even in the present Supreme Court simply because the procedure is so heinous. Simply because it is indistinguishable from infanticide. Maybe there will be a day in the future when people will see abortion by other methods in a similar light. One can only hope. Northrup also says that the cases will show where the Supreme Court is headed on abortion in the future.
We will be finding out in this case whether the new justices are going to follow established law or whether they're going to cut 30 years of Supreme Court precedent on the importance of women's health in regulation of abortion.
Look, I don't think the 30 years matter. Actually, it's closer to 34 years. I don't think those really matter. I was looking back at the slavery cases. I just did this in preparation for a presentation I made on Amendment 2. I was looking back at slavery cases in the Supreme Court. There was a time when the U.S. Supreme Court said that for all intents and purposes, a slave, whether freed or still owned by someone, cannot be recognized by the law. The Dred Scott case, a slave, whether freed or owned by someone, is not recognized by the law as a citizen, as deserving any protections under the U.S. Constitution. That was a Supreme Court decision that was made and that was upheld for quite some time. I don't know how long. It doesn't make any difference. The decision was wrong. And whether a wrong decision has persisted for 3 years or 34 years, as far as I'm concerned, it's always eligible to be overturned. A bad precedent is a bad precedent, even 34 years after it's set. Karen calls from her car. Karen, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks, Todd. I just don't remember seeing a revelation from God that gave us permission to decide when or how anybody could die.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, they're talking about the demise of the fetus. Well, we can do it this way or we can do it this way. God will take that child when it's his will. And they're just taking his business away from him.
Karen, thank you very, very much. It's a good point. Yeah, what they're doing is they're taking a life. And this is, you heard it right, Karen. there in the hallowed chambers of the Supreme Court, the justices were asking their questions and the lawyers were making their arguments. And the center of it was, when can we take this life and how? Really, how can we take this life? The when was irrelevant. How can we take this life? How can a woman bring about the demise of her fetus? That's always the question in abortion, but with partial birth abortion, they're just saying, is this way of bringing about the demise of the fetus just too much, just over the top, too close, perhaps even equivalent to infanticide? Well, here's more from Nancy Northrup, who's from the Center for Reproductive Rights. She says that the Supreme Court has placed a woman's health as paramount and should stay that way.
For 30 years, ever since Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court has said if the government is going to pass restrictive abortion laws, they can't do it in ways that compromise women's health. Women's health has always been paramount, and that's what the issue is in this case.
When has the government passed restrictive abortion laws? When? This is the first federal attempt to regulate Roe at any level. It is. And it's simply seeking to outlaw the most egregious form of abortion. I would say the most obvious form of abortion. You take the health of the mother. It's interesting that they call it, did she call her a mother? Buzz, I want to hear that one again, the one we just listened to. Did she call her a woman or a mother? You got it? Play it again.
For 30 years, ever since Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court has said if the government is going to pass restrictive abortion laws, they can't do it in ways that compromise women's health. Women's health has always been paramount, and that's what the issue is in this case.
It's women's health. Women in the abstract. Now, we're actually talking about the mother's health, aren't we? I just heard that. It was in my brain for some reason. Maybe because I know that the woman is also a mother. Not just a woman, but a mother. Nancy Northrup, president of the Center for Reproductive Rights, says that the trial courts have found that the 2003 Act is much more broad than other laws.
It's not about what we say or the other side says. When they looked at the facts and they looked at what Congress did, the trial court said, wow, this is going to cover most common and safe abortion procedures in the second trimester.
Do you want to know why? Because whether they meant to or not, the trial courts realized that abortion is abortion is abortion is abortion. And while there may be more heinous and obvious forms that everyone can see, like partial birth abortion, it is the same procedure with just a few differences, like where the baby's located when you actually bring about quote-unquote fetal demise. That's the only difference between partial birth abortion and any other form of abortion. That's what they recognized. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio. I know this is difficult stuff to think about. I know this is difficult stuff to hear about. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Well, let's hear a theological case, oddly enough, in favor of partial birth abortion. Here's the Reverend Catherine Ragsdahl. She's board member. She's actually an Episcopal priestess and a board member for NARAL Pro-Choice America.
We're pro-choice not in spite of our faith, but because of our faith. We may have varying opinions about when or if abortion is ever an appropriate moral choice, but we're very clear about who should make that decision, and it is neither the church nor the government.
I wonder if that kind of argument, just take the word abortion out and put in something like stealing or murder or tax fraud. Why is it that abortion is the one human act that, in the mindset of those who are in favor of it, cannot, must not, in any way, be regulated by either church or government? What other facet of human existence, what other activity, human enterprise, goes completely untouched by government? I should have a right to drive my car as fast as I want, wherever I want. It's my choice. It's my car. And I'm of the mindset that the choice of how fast to drive my car, could it be dangerous to me and others? Sure it could, but that choice should be left up to me and not to the government. That's ludicrous. People who think that way get speeding tickets, and if they get enough of them, they lose their license. Brenda calls from her car. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Todd. I was just wondering, why don't we play their game? And they say that it's paramount that the woman's health is the most important thing. Well, do we have any statistics on what it does psychologically to a woman to kill her own baby?
Brenda, thank you very much. It's a great point. Yes, we do. We should. There have only been tens of millions of abortions performed in the United States in the last 34 years. So there are an awful lot of women out there who've undergone this procedure. Now, many of those are accounted for by multiple abortions. So there's a lot of data out there. And, you know, there are groups like Silent No More and others who are women who have had abortions who have come out and said, look, this is harmful psychologically, emotionally, physically, in terms of my relationships, in terms of my ability to relate to a man, in terms of my ability to reproduce in the future, in terms of my ability to think about my future kids. And they will tell you that on the balance, it has been very harmful to them, even under the broadest definitions of health that the pro-choice community wants to use. It's been very harmful to them to have an abortion. And many of them will tell you that had they known how severely it would damage their health, broadly defined, they never would have done it. But that's not the kind of concern for women's health that the pro-choice advocates of even things like partial birth abortion want you to think about. As an example, the Reverend Ragsdale, again, she says that there are religious traditions and that they differ widely on when the fetus actually becomes a person.
The Roman Catholic Church would tell you from the minute of fertilization. Most other religious groups would probably not take it back that far. Jewish tradition would say from the moment of the first breath.
I don't understand what she's saying. Most other religious groups wouldn't take it back that far. It is certainly not a peculiar view of Roman Catholicism that life begins at conception and that personhood kicks in at conception when you've got a person there. That's not a peculiarly Roman Catholic view. Most other religious, give me an example. I think what she's talking about is Episcopalians. And as for whether, I don't know if I were Jewish of any stripe, I'd be concerned about her characterizing this view that somehow she seems to insinuate that if you're Jewish, you don't have a problem with abortion all the way up to the moment of the final moments of the term of the pregnancy. First breath. In fact, if you keep the kid from taking his first breath, maybe you can even exterminate him then. We'll be right back with more audio.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Who is this Jesus in whom the Christian Church professes faith? What has he accomplished? What is his relationship to God the Father? What is the human problem related to this Jesus? And what is necessary for salvation? How the early church struggled with these five questions is the subject of our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for November, The Great Jesus Debates. You can read a chapter on our website, issuesetc.org, or find out more about The Great Jesus Debates by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. How did the Gnostic, Arian, Christological, and Pelagian controversies influence the development of the historic Christian creeds? Find out with The Great Jesus Debates, 1-800-325-3040, or issuesetc.org. The Great Jesus Debates, our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for November.
Evolution Ideas, They change all the time. Answers with Ken Ham, author of the best-selling book, The Lie, Evolution. Well, Ken, isn't it a serious problem for evolutionists when they change their beliefs so often? Doesn't this even bother them?
Well, it should bother them, Mark, but it doesn't. What kind of truth, as they call evolution, changes all the time? I mean, it's bizarre. But in this modern world, where for many, everything's relative, a changing truth can be the best truth for some people. Evolutionists admit their ideas change, but they say it's a strength of what they say is their theory. I'll quote a booklet written by the American Geological Institute. Quote, "This booklet describes a small portion of the evidence for evolution. Many fascinating questions remain concerning the history of life and the process through which it has developed. As we continue to learn about life on Earth, the theory of evolution will itself evolve. This is the strength, adventure, and excitement of doing science." End of quote. What kind of truth is this when nothing you say is certain? The only people who want this truth don't want to be accountable to anyone or anything. You know, it's wonderful to know that God's word never changes. His truths are always true from the very first verse.
What about evolutionary ideas related to the origin of the universe? Should we believe what secular astronomers say or what the Bible teaches? One of our free booklets has the answer, and it's available through our website, answersradio.com.
AM 850 KFUO is grateful for those who support our radio ministry. Today we say thank you to Vernon and Evelyn Mensch of Redbud, Illinois, Wilbert and Dorothea Thieleman of Nashville, Illinois, and Ronald and Janet Klein of Smithton, Illinois. Your support helps make the programming on AM 850 KFUO possible.
Well, here we go again. We're taking our Bible study on the road, and I'm hoping you can join us and participate in the broadcast. It'll be Wednesday, November 15th. We'll originate our regular Bible study program from Christ Memorial Lutheran Church, 5252 South Lindbergh in St. Louis. Pastor Bill Simmons will be the guest. Why don't you come to our live broadcast and bring a friend? Lunch will be served afterwards, and I hope to see you on Wednesday, November 15th, 10:05 in the morning for our live Bible study program from Christ Memorial Lutheran Church in St. Louis.
On the next midday, Living Jubilee, live at 11:05 on AM 850 KFUO. Join Paul Clayton and me, Diane Summers. We will talk with the Reverend Dr. Gary Rohwer, who is the Director of Education, Missions, and Ministries for People of the Book Lutheran Outreach International. What are the tasks and expectations of this newly installed director? It begins at 11:05, Living Jubilee on AM 850 KFUO.
There's a rare ruckus in the Supreme Court yesterday during arguments being made on the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. It was a protester calling for repentance. He was very quickly dismissed from the courtroom. We're talking about the Supreme Court's arguments that were heard yesterday and hearing on, from both sides on the issue of the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act in about the last 10 minutes here of audio open lines issues, etc. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, is a great place. We were just there, and it still looked a little bit like fall. But by the time we get to the Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana Symposium, which this year in January, that's just the other side of the year, you know, will be held on Christian identity in a pagan world, lessons from ancient Israel and early Christianity. It'll probably be winter up there. It's the 30th annual symposium on the Lutheran confessions that will focus also on confessional Lutheranism in the ecumenical world. You can find out all about the big symposium that they hold up there in Fort Wayne every January by calling them, area code 260-452-2241. 260-452-2241, or go to their website, ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu. All right, we've heard from those who are in favor of keeping partial birth abortion safe, legal, and rare. Let's hear from some of the proponents of the Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act. Here's Helen Olvure, she's a law professor at Catholic University of America with a very interesting and, I think, compelling argument.
We all know it would even be safer, rather than stabbing a sharp instrument near the mother to kill the child, just to deliver the child and kill him or her just 12 or 20 inches away. But that would be homicide. So why isn't this?
That is a great question. Why isn't this, in fact, if you wanted to argue for the maximum amount of safety, the healthiest form of fetal demise, healthiest for the mother, that is, this would be your answer. Just simply deliver the child and put it out of everyone's misery as far away from the womb. Take the child to the next room. Then there's no danger to the mother at all. The healthiest form by far. I know that it's an argument that's made with some tongue in cheek, but it does point out exactly what's going on in partial birth abortion and in all other forms of abortion, too. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can email us here in the last few minutes of the program, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Benjamin Bull, who's chief counsel of the Alliance Defense Fund, says that giving birth is far safer for a woman than the outlawed procedure, partial birth abortion.
It's marginally healthier for the mother to go ahead and give birth to the baby and have the abortionist just shoot it or drown it, if that's the criteria we're going to start using.
Yes, if we're going to use as our criteria for what procedures of fetal demise we will approve and protect in law, if we're going to use the health of the mother as the overriding criteria, then let's do it the healthiest way possible. For the mother. I think there's a lot of risk there in partial birth abortion procedure for the mother. And if you are willing to say that the baby is three quarters delivered before fetal demise is, the fetal demise procedure is undertaken, why quibble over a couple inches? Simply deliver the baby and then do away with it in the next room. Now remember, abortion is abortion is abortion, wherever, whenever it takes place. From partial birth abortion to third trimester abortions, here's Bill O'Reilly reporting on an investigation into the practices of an abortion doctor in Kansas. You've heard his name before. It's George Tiller.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly reporting tonight from Boston. Thank you for watching us. Killing babies in America. That's the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. For more than a year, the Factor has been investigating Dr. George Tiller of Kansas. For $5,000, Tiller, the baby killer as some call him, will perform a late-term abortion for just about any reason. In Kansas, the law says that abortions are legal after 22 weeks when a baby in the womb becomes viable, only if there is, quote, irreversible impairment of a major bodily function of the pregnant woman, unquote. Now, that's a pretty high bar, but there is the mental health exception, and that is where Dr. Tiller lives. The Factor has learned that in Kansas, a mental health exception can be just about anything. However, we needed to prove that. So we tried to get Tiller's records. We could not. He cited patient confidentiality. And month after month, we were frustrated. But now, the Factor has evidence that indicates Tiller killed late-term fetuses by citing temporary depression on the part of the mother. That was the reason Tiller performed scores, perhaps thousands, of late-term abortions. Temporary depression could mean anything. So what we have here in Kansas is a doctor who will terminate a pregnancy at any time for a reason that is vague and undefined. Now, I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, even if you are pro-choice, do you believe this is morally right? Tiller himself will not comment about his barbaric practice, but we've obtained a video where he says this.
Patients are smart enough to understand what's going on with them. Patients are tough enough to put up with the emotional pain of the decision, and patients are responsible enough to put up with the good results and the bad results that come from their decisions.
Now, in addition to Tiller's late-term abortion bill, the Factor has obtained information that his clinic and another in Kansas are violating the law. Dozens of abortions have been performed in that state on girls ages 10 to 15, some of them by Tiller, 10 to 15. And those abortions were not reported to authorities as required by law. Now, several of those abortions indicated forcible rape. Once again, they weren't reported. So the criminals who impregnated the girls have so far gotten away with it. Kansas Attorney General Phil Klein, whom we'll talk to in a few moments, is trying to rectify the situation, but is under attack from many newspapers in his state. Will you hear this? And this is simply incomprehensible. In the state of Kansas, there is a doctor, George Tiller, who will execute babies for $5,000 if the mother is depressed. And there are rapists impregnating 10-year-olds who are being protected by abortion clinics. Doesn't get worse than that. This is the absolute shame of America.
I agree. And I don't often agree with Bill O'Reilly, but I agree with him there. Think about this. And I think the most compelling argument that he made is look at what's going on with this singular example of George Tiller in Kansas, who is willing for a price to bend the definition of the health of the mother to the degree that he's willing to say, look, it was temporary depression. That's why I did the abortion. Do abortions on girls 10 to 15 years old and not report the cases of rape that led to them. And this was his argument, even if you are pro-choice. Is this what you really intend to protect when you talk about the right of a woman to choose? Really? Is this what you think ought to be protected in law? Really? We're getting near the end of the year, and we're getting toward our goal of 300 Reformation Club members. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club is simply our monthly or annual donor program. What do you support when you become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or our newest levels called the patron? Well, listen to what we've talked about over the course of just this week of Issues Etc. We talked earlier with Lisa Miller from Newsweek magazine about the politics of Jesus. We had a conversation with Kristen Day of Democrats for Life on election and pro-life Democrats. We had some election analysis with Congressman John Shimkus. We talked with Dr. Martin Nolan on the same day about Luther's father confessor, Johannes von Staupitz. We reviewed the passage of Amendment 2 in Missouri with Jackie Winship of Missourians Against Human Cloning. Talked about the ordination of women with Dr. Peter Scare when we were up in Fort Wayne. Sanctification and the Christian life was one of the subjects, too, we dealt with earlier in the week. And we had audio open lines on the consecration of Catherine Jeffords Shorey to be the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church USA. Larry Rast was with us. We talked about American revivalism to kick off the week. That's what you support when you join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. And you'll also get our new Issues Etc. I Have Issues t-shirt. You can check it out at our website, issuesetc.org. Both front and back are there for you to see, issuesetc.org. Check that out tonight and join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.
Does man have a free will to accept Jesus Christ as his Savior, or is man's will bound in sin? Well, this isn't a new issue facing the Christian Church. It goes all the way back to an early church struggle between two men, Augustine and Pelagius. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November details how the early church dealt with false teachings. It's titled The Great Jesus Debates. It's published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
AM 850 KFUO Clayton, St. Louis now concludes its broadcast day. KFUO AM operates with a signal strength of 5,000 watts on a frequency of 850 kilohertz. Some of today's programs may have contained persons or opinions not in agreement with the management of this station, the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Join us tomorrow when AM 850 KFUO returns to the air. Have a pleasant night, and may the peace of the Lord be with you.